Welcome to PodNuts, a computer repair podcast, episode number 231. HIPAA, health insurance, portability, and accountability. I am your host, Jeff Hallisch. I am joined today by John Dubinsky from the Maven Group. How are you doing, John?
Better than I deserve.
Awesome, man. Great to have you on this show. And this is a little special show that John and I had pulled together, mostly John. I'm just here as an interviewer, and I'm going to kind of interview John. But this whole subject came up because of a couple of emails that we got. And I want to go ahead and read those emails so we can know who has actually helped us with this subject. All right. So the first email is from Abram Haynes. And here's what he said. He says, "Hi, Jeff and team. I'm a fairly new listener, and I love the show." Appreciate that. "I've been working in IT for about 15 years. I had a retail store for many of those years with several employees. I did a lot of things, satellite sales, installs, custom home theater, VoIP, built and managed a small WISP phone repair, residential PC repair, business IT, etc. In early 2016, I decided to make a big change after looking deep into my finances and seeing that only one thing was really making me any money. It's also what I love the most and was best at. Business IT. I sold my retail store and all my residential clients and moved into my house with just one employee and started finding my niche in business IT. It has already been widely successful. Who would have thought letting go of 90% of my business would result in making more money? Anyway, onto the reason for this email. Several of my largest business clients are in the medical industry. I've been frantically getting myself up to speed on everything that needs to be implemented to ensure that they are HIPAA compliant for my own protection and theirs. Side note, it seems that IT companies carry the brunt of the liability when it comes to HIPAA, and if one of my clients got audited, HIPAA would go after me for not ensuring that that client was compliant. Is that true? And we'll answer that in a little bit here. There is a lot of misinformation and incomplete information out there. Yeah, it's the internet. And it's hard to feel good about knowing what you have, all your bases covered. Is there a resource that is definitive? No. That will tell me everything that I need to do to ensure that my clients are following the HIPAA rules? If not, would you consider making this a topic or spending some time with your brain trust talking about it so I can get your collective take on HIPAA? I'm talking about it from an IT standpoint here. I know that many parts of HIPAA have nothing to do with IT, and I'm not necessarily interested in getting involved with those items at this point. Here's what I think I know so far. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong on any of this. Encrypted on-site and off-site backups. Data must be encrypted both in transit and while at rest. Must be able to provide a patient with medical record within 24 hours, no matter what the scenario. i.e. natural disaster, theft, hardware failure, etc. Bi-monthly test restores of backups. Compliance email service, encrypted email. Workstation lock policies to ensure no unauthorized access. Don't know if these are specific timeout periods that HIPAA wants to see or not. Password reset policies. Don't know what HIPAA wants to see here either. UTM firewall protection. Unsure on what HIPAA specifically wants here. Everyone has a unique login. No generic staff login that everyone uses. User lockout policies after X amount of failed password attempts. Don't know what the X should be or how long they need to be locked out for. Periodic vulnerability audits. Is there some way or is there some form for this? How often do they need to be done? Tons of paperwork. I don't know what paperwork is needed. Here's some questions that I have. Can I have publicly facing RDP connections if I have user lockout policies? What about other public open ports? I'm supposed to have a business associate agreement with all my medical clients, but I don't know where to find one. Is there a template somewhere? Some clients don't know what to do when it takes to be compliant because of cost or whatever. How do I protect myself in that situation if they get audited? In your experience, do you find that it's better to set yourself up as a HIPAA compliance expert in all areas so there's no gray area on what the client is handling and what you should be handling, i.e. going on or ongoing training, documentation, physical premise, our premises, security, etc. Many parts of HIPAA have little or nothing to do with it, but they are still not followed by most practices, probably in part because they don't know what they need to do. I'm sure I have a ton more questions, but don't even know enough to know what to ask. The HIPAA stuff seems to just go deeper and deeper. The more I learn, the more I find out that I need to learn. This ended up being a long email, so feel free only to discuss parts of it or whatever for the sake of time. Keep up the good work and thank you. And Abraham, I have to say that this is the reason we're actually doing a special show because of your email, and we wanted to take some dedicated time to answering some of these questions. Now, we're not going to have all the answers, and I will go back to what I've said time and time again. I don't know any businesses out there that are 100% HIPAA client or HIPAA compliant at this point. But we're going to dive into some of the things that you have asked. And the reason John's on here is because he deals with this too. And we're going to let him go into the background on that. Let me read the second email here real quick and we'll get started here. And I believe this is from John Reed, right, John?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Yes. He says, I watch and listen every week to the Podnuts show. Last week, you all opened the door for us who are in business to reach out to you for advice. Here I am. I believe I've heard you talk about being HIPAA certified. How do I get that certification? I could use some guidance on this if you're willing. And I want to read John's short answer to this particular question, because it talks about being a HIPAA compliant expert or having some certification. Short answer, there is no such thing as HIPAA certification or a HIPAA certification, as there is no regulatory body that certifies individuals, companies, or products. For example, this is nothing equivalent for HIPAA in comparison to something like ISO 9000, etc., which I know all about. And those are pretty darn thorough. In a nutshell, HIPAA is a law that contains provisions enforced by HHS, OCR, and other regulatory bodies for the safeguarding of protected health information. Part of these provisions include technology-related items that geeks like you and I need to help customers maintain. Unfortunately, there is no simple checklist or primer that covers all things HIPAA, as most of the technology implementation for a customer is related to the disaster planning, risk assessments, and notification planning performed by the customer to meet the provisions set forth in the law. Wow, lot of information, John, and I know you came up with some very detailed notes on what HIPAA is and some of the things that you know you have to do and some of the things that you are still working on in your with your customers to make sure that they are as HIPAA compliant as possible.
Well, let me start out with two things. One, Abraham's and John's email were fantastic. You know, Abraham's email from the point of view that he's already thinking about everything he should be thinking about.
Absolutely.
All right. And then John, I get a lot, and I was probably in John's spot maybe about a year ago of, you know, throwing your hands up and saying, well, where the heck do I start? And we'll get, there's a couple other podcasts that I referred to, but on one of the best ones that I listened to, they refer to HIPAA as an elephant. And how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Right.
So it's huge, huge. So as you and I discussed, we should start this podcast off with our disclaimer that says, this is the point of the show that I say, Jeff and I, to include the Podnuts Network, its guests, sponsors, and listeners, are in no way providing legal or specific advice as it applies to HIPAA, compliance, networking, computer technology, or anything contained to referred to or in this show, okay? We're just some old guys talking about computer technology, providing advice based on our experience. So take it for what it's worth and what you paid to receive it. So
there you go.
You know, refer Great. To a lawyer if yeah. you want actual advice. So with that said, here's my personal opinion and what I've done with HIPAA. And this is no way, I'm not providing the whole elephant as we discussed. There's no way for me to do that in the, any amount of time we have allotted. But we're going to touch on a lot of the things that John asked and Abraham asked. So, Jeff, I'm going to let you kind of be the guy that interrupts. And if I get too technical or if there's something weird, even if you know what it means, stop me. We'll talk about it.
Oh, you know I will.
You know? All right. All right. So basically, HIPAA, the one thing that I see the most is everybody spells it wrong. It's HIPAA, not HIPAA. So H-I-P-A-A. Get that out of the way, because I did that way back to the beginning myself. It's been around since 1996. Most people don't realize that. The Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. So basically, what is it? Originally designed to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the healthcare system to make your medical record portable. So it's basically a conglomeration of addendums, rules, regulations, rulings, and these provisions and requirements are updated regularly. And the cool thing or the neat thing or the awful thing that I like to refer to is the HIPAA security portion of it, which is, you know, the kind of the tech portion of it, is only 8 pages in the entire law.
Oh, nice.
Okay. So, and this is a document that is, I don't know how long it is, but hundreds of pages. So, but those 8 pages create all the mess that we're talking about, because inside of there will be 3 types of safeguards that they talk about: administrative, physical, and technical. So we get thrown into the technical role, and that's what we'll talk about today a little bit.
Now, John, let me ask you a question on the,
sure.
One of the things I hear brought up all the time is we keep talking about this as a law. Is this actually a law that is on the books somewhere if it's not governed by the federal government?
It is governed by the federal government, and it is an act that was passed.
Okay.
So, yes.
Gotcha. I just wanted to clarify.
This is not something that is, a lot of people think are optional.
Okay.
They also look at the law and say that, oh, I don't have to do all of this. And where the big word that is misread in there is a lot of the times it says addressable. All right. And what addressable means is that it's not optional. It's how you want to address it, meaning you need to address it, not you don't have to do it.
Okay.
All right. So that's where there's a lot of confusion in there. And even that word addressable can mean, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's start more back at the beginning. Let's talk about the acronyms you need to know when you're dealing with HIPAA. So the department, or HHS, the Department of Health and Human Services, and the Office for Civil Rights, OCR, are probably the 2 main bodies that you'll run into when you start reading all these HIPAA provisions. The DHS, Homeland Security, gets involved with this. The ONC, the Office of National Coordinator and Health Information Technology, gets involved with this. Everybody knows who NIST is, probably, National Institute of Science and Technology. They have a great document I'll refer to in this. I'm going to throw PCI in here, which is the credit card industry, and we'll talk just a tiny bit on how that ties in. PHI is Protected Health Information, and you can also see that listed as EPHI, Electronic Protected Health Information. BAA is a Business Associate Agreement, and I will have a link in the show notes for what a BAA is and what you can look at for what a BAA is. So what are we really talking about with PHI? So it's health information that, and I'm going to address this from a tech, from an MSP, from a break and fix, from a technician point of view. So if we are involved in the creation of PHI, if we receive PHI, if we maintain PHI, or are involved in the transmission of PHI, our job is to protect that. And that's how we get involved in those 8 pages of the security rule. So the HIPAA security rule requires those 3 types of safeguards that we talked about: administrative, physical, and then technical. All right. As a tech, we do not provide HIPAA compliance. And this is my opinion. We assist our customers in becoming compliant. So you have to be careful that a lot of the times, since you're the front-facing person that might be bringing most of this stuff to them, that a lot of the times they will turn around and try to make you the owner of it, which is not what you want to do, because you will become overwhelmed. Because one of the primary things that needs to happen with HIPAA is documentation. If it's not documented, it was never done. So you could be HIPAA compliant today, meaning you've done everything in those 3 rules. If you don't have any of it documented, you haven't done anything if you get audited or have a breach. So it needs to be all written down.
John, one of the things I was thinking about when that was brought up was that if I'm an employer and I have employees, if an employee does something on behalf, or a subcontractor, whatever, on behalf of my business that is wrong, as the owner, I am still 100% responsible for what happens in my business, whether I caused it or not. Correct?
You bet, because 90% of the time, it's going to be a user that gets you in trouble with any of this. They're going to accidentally transmit information that they shouldn't have. They're going to click a link so that you have a ransomware infection, which is a breach of privacy, unless you can prove otherwise. You know, it's the same reason of getting an virus, just like getting a virus infection or doing something else that may not be HIPAA totally related. You know, users do it 90% of the time. So that's why under the HIPAA provisions, you need to have ongoing training. You have to have breach response plans, some risk assessments, and we'll get a little bit into that. So we talked a little bit about, you know, compliance, what is it, and how we assist our clients. And then you also mentioned HIPAA certified. If you browse the web or anything like that, you'll see even a lot of the vendors that we deal with say they're HIPAA certified. No. Even clients that are way ahead of this, or even if you're a hospital or something like that, there is no such thing. You may be HIPAA certified or HIPAA compliant today, but tomorrow you may not be. It's kind of a moving target that never ends. When customers ask me about this, I kind of say it's like your collections, your accounts receivable. It's an ongoing thing. You always have to chase this down because there's always training. There's always new employees coming in. There's always ongoing stuff that needs to happen as part of HIPAA. And like we talked about, there is no ISO certification that says stamp your ISO 9000. Thank you very much. So not to mention, there's not a governing body. There's no part of the government that says, okay, you're HIPAA certified.
Right. So okay.
There's no way to get that. And I'm going to put a couple of these links in there, but there's a company called Cardin Compliance that does a great job and works with customers to do this, that has a review of a compliance plan that I'll put in there, which is a good place to start for your clients. But if we get into the basics, and I am stressing the word basics of HIPAA compliance, and how I think you can help your customers and how I help my customers. You know, here's my little list that we'll get into.
Okay.
All right. Number one, there's no part of HIPAA that's optional. All right. All of HIPAA is a requirement. Now, there's the caveat to that is you may do what's called a risk assessment. And in your risk assessment, you may determine based on that assessment that you do not need to comply. But that means you have addressed that portion and documented why you do not need to do that. And a lot of people thought, or I had a couple of customers say to me, well, Obama won't be in office and all that medical stuff that he did is going to get rolled back. So HIPAA won't apply anymore. You know, and then a couple of the other podcasts, it's funny how they mentioned the exact same thing. So I chuckled about that. No, got to remember, this has been around since 1996 and it's become more and more enforced as we move forward. So addressable does not mean optional. It's all required.
Gotcha.
You need to get a business, number two, you need to get a business associate agreement with your customers. What that means is that is something they provide to you. So you get a BAA from what's called a covered entity, and you get that. What you might need to get if you're providing services to clients is you might need to get a business associate agreement from vendors. Maybe you're a backup vendor. Maybe your remote management company. It all depends on what kind of access they have to the systems that you're monitoring, or if they have access to that PHI that we discussed. So keep in mind that once you are a business associate to a covered entity, so a covered entity would be a doctor's office. I'm a business associate of that office. I now need to be HIPAA compliant or try to reach HIPAA compliance. So that means all these rules we talked about, the Maven Group now has to do all of that stuff, documentation, risk assessment, because I have access to those things we talked about, meaning the data. So it all rolls downhill from the covered entity to a business associate to a service provider.
So, John, I've heard you talk about this before, is that not only are you covering your customers to be HIPAA compliant, but you there sitting in your office have to have things in place that are set up that you are HIPAA compliant also, because you are in support of these businesses, correct?
Right. And this rolls back to Abraham's question, meaning, you know, is he responsible? All right. The answer to that question is it depends. meaning, Okay, so let's say we're dealing with a client that has a breach. All right. What's a good example of this that everybody would know? Okay, Target, way back when with the credit card.
Yep.
All right. Target did not actually lose that data or disclose that data. That actually came from an air conditioning or a third-party vendor. Now, we're not talking about health information here, but this might happen the same way. So let's say it's me. Let's say I don't do something and I get some sort of hack, for lack of a better word, a negative hack on my systems, and therefore that allows the bad guys into my customer's PHI. That is my responsibility. And what would happen, since I would have a breach, OCR or HHS would look at me and probably audit me to say what happened. And they would try to see what I've done as far as my compliance and search to reach compliance to see where I was, to see if it was no fault, an accident, or if I just have ignored the rules, or didn't use two-factor, don't have strong passwords. And we'll go through the five things that, you know, you're supposed to have at a minimum that leads to all these other rules. So okay. Yes. In that case, that would be my fault if it came from me. Now, since I might not be the provider of that breach or that hole, you know, obviously, if my covered entity has a breach, you know, eyeballs are going to come back at me too, because I'm providing the things that we'll talk about that are part of that technical or security assessment. Did that answer the question?
Yes, absolutely.
So in a nutshell, once you're a business associate for a covered entity, you're bound by the same compliance rules.
Okay.
Period. So those eight pages become extremely overwhelming. So in there, it says a lot of times there's sort of this doctrine that says if it's reasonable and appropriate. So those are the two words you want to look at. So HIPAA rules are guidelines. All right. That need to be followed. There's nothing optional in there, but the rules are set for every size of healthcare organization. So, you know, you have the huge, what is it, Detroit Mercy over there, hospital system on your side of the state.
Right.
So those same rules apply to that hospital system that would apply to your dental office, one guy running. So what is reasonable and appropriate for the dental office versus the hospital? So that's kind of where a lot of the gray area comes into effect, because if you talk to a technical advisor for a hospital, they would say, well, you need to do this, which is totally unreasonable for some solo dentist to do, because you simply can't afford to do that. So it's reasonable and appropriate. A good starting point for all of this is the location of the PHI. Where is this health information? And I also like to say, this is the same thing for credit card information, which would guide you with PCI, or, you know, even if when you're doing backup and retention, where is all their data? So locate all of that PHI in the system. Good example of this is somebody might get an x-ray to their computer. They download that x-ray. Most staff members don't realize that that x-ray is now sitting in their downloads folder. Even though they've imported it into their management system, that x-ray is usually sitting on the computer still.
Okay.
So now we have PHI not on a server, maybe in some place that's not encrypted and is accessible by a lot of people that maybe shouldn't see that x-ray. So, you know, that's a good way to determine where your PHI, and this is a good place to stop and talk about the technical safeguards that are required. So we now have this x-ray sitting out on a system. How do we protect that x-ray? So a requirement is access control in HIPAA, which means unique usernames and passwords. So you have a management system, a healthcare management system, what EHR or whatever that is, or dental, EagleSoft, Dentrix. So we have to have usernames, passcodes, you know, to protect so that nobody can get in there. And even as part of HIPAA, it goes so far as you should not be browsing a patient database if you're like a hygienist or even a nurse. You should only be looking at the patients that you have direct, you know, work to, meaning I see this patient, therefore I can see their medical record. I shouldn't be browsing Johnny's paperwork, or, you know, the stories that get into this is maybe you have somebody that has a little bit of fame that comes into the office, but you're not the one. So you might go over to look at what's up with them. So that is not allowed. And really most of the EHR systems are trying to get to the point where your login will only allow you to see certain patients, so that, you know, everything is supposed to be siloed.
Okay.
So access control is required. So the next thing is to comply. Is you need to be able to authenticate what's called healthcare information. I don't deal with this a lot in the dental world, but really what that is, and this is an addressable one, is whether that information has been altered. You know, is it a legitimate information that you're receiving? So that's a tough one. Encryption and decryption. It says addressable in the rule. In my opinion, if it moves or if it's in the office, just encrypt everything. Windows 10 Pro, it's included. You know, if it leaves the office, meaning laptop, phone, and has any access to or has any PHI on it, encrypt it, period. The great thing about that is if you have an encrypted device, the general rule is if it's lost or stolen, you don't have to report.
Oh, nice.
As long as that you can, as long as you have it documented and you can prove that that device was encrypted, you would just document that we lost this device, but it was fully encrypted, so we don't have any worries.
Good.
So,
okay.
That's a beautiful thing. 1, 2, 3. Number 4 out of number 5 is audits. And this is required. You're supposed to be able to audit who accessed what, when, and how, anything to PHI. So that's a requirement. And automatic log offs. I think Abraham mentioned this, you know, screen blanking, automatic log out. This is addressable. All right. But there is a lot of guidance in the rulings that have recently came out. So, you know, if I've seen anything from 15 seconds to 15 minutes that you're supposed to have auto log out. If you've ever been to the doctor, you know, and you've spent any time in the exam room, you know, you'll notice, I don't know, the doctor or nurse will turn around and spend 5 minutes with you, turn back around, and then they have to log back into the darn computer. So that's what we're talking about.
John, do you know the rule on that? Like how many seconds?
It's an addressable rule. I have not found anything official from what I know that says it has to be this period of time.
Okay. What would be, and there's no maximum where they say anything past this would be too much. It needs to be this or shorter. Nothing, huh?
You know, I've read all over. You know, I usually, let me back up. No user likes to have to log off and log on 100 times.
Right.
And it's probably the biggest thing. Because usually what I will do with my RMM, I can set that log off time for the Windows PCs. And I don't know how the other guys do it. But usually what I find is I start pretty high. And then I have some to-do lists. And I keep knocking that down for like 5 minutes. And I'm going to just keep taking it down until I get to like 15 minutes. Or, you know, I get some sort of huge pushback. And then we'll have a discussion.
Okay.
Because usually what happens is I'll get to some point where I'll get a ticket or something from one of the users that says, I have to keep logging. My screen keeps going back to the screensaver after, you know, I'll get some sort of feedback. And then if they don't like it, you know, then you talk to the doc and you have to explain to the doc what's going on or the office manager and then say, well, here's what the addressable rule says in HIPAA. What are you comfortable with? What are you going to document? And what are you going to tell me to do? Here's what I advise you to do is that we make that period as short as possible. You know, I would set it to a minute if I thought that was reasonable.
Right. But,
we're talking about inactive time. Too.
Right.
So if they're typing, it's obviously not going to go blank. But, and the rule is also that the computer should be locked when they move away. So it should be locked anytime they leave the front of the station, leave the station anyways. Does that happen? No. But,
you know,
so those are the primary. Go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things I remember having to do, and people would complain about this all the time, somebody messing around on their desktop, and this wasn't even in a medical facility. And I had to show them, I said, hey, there's this neat little Windows key. And if you push the Windows key and an L, when you get up from your desk and walk away, it'll lock it till you get back. Then you can log back in. Oh, I didn't know I could do that. So sometimes it's a little bit of explanation, and depending on how lazy people are, really, is what it comes down to.
Well, then I think there's also a lot of misunderstanding of actually what that does. Because usually when I tell people about that, they're like, oh my God, you mean I'm going to have to reboot the computer, restart all the programs? You know, they don't realize that it's just kind of a little shield.
Right.
And everything's still happening behind the scenes. Once you explain them to that, they're like, oh, okay.
Okay.
So, you know. So those are the primary 5. Access control, authenticate PHI, encryption, audit controls, and log off. Now, obviously, a lot stems out from that. So, you know, we're talking about, Abraham brought up unique passwords. to me, that goes back to common sense in today's day and age. The NIST document all referred to, PCI, HIPAA, all that, all unique passwords, and you need to have that. Encryption, if you read into the rule, you know, the rule reads, PHI needs to be encrypted in transit and at rest as addressable. So my rule is, and a lot of the other people that talk about this that know a ton more than I do, says if it moves, encrypt it, meaning if it's on a phone, if it's on a laptop, if you're going to email it, if you're going to send it, it needs to be encrypted. Where I'm going with this, and I'm certainly not there yet, is I'm encrypting everything. Every desktop in the office will be encrypted. All the servers will be encrypted. All the phone, everything I can get my hands on that I can encrypt, I'm going to encrypt because there's no cost to it anymore. So,
right. Okay.
For a little bit of work, and it just makes things that much better if we should have a breach. You know, I always imagine somebody breaking into an office and just stealing all the computers, and all they want, they don't care about the PHI. They just want to sell the hardware or whatever. If that happened, I mean, and we're totally encrypted, that's okay. We'd get new computers and we move on. So that's pretty much how easy that is. Documentation. Did I mention that already? Everything needs to be documented.
Yet. Yeah. Lot of documentation.
All right. As a technician, you have to be able to provide a lot of documentation. If you're an MSP,
Just rope a little bit. Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. All right. You're going to want to be able to provide audit logs, virus logs, access logs, blah, 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 blah. And most of what I'm seeing in there is you need to be able to provide 1 year of history on all that.
Okay.
And the reason you need to be able to have that is if you have a breach, most of the time a breach isn't discovered until some point in the future. So you're going to be asked to provide what was going on in the past. So that is why you need to have logs.
And is that
my next item? Oh, go ahead.
Is that 1 year of history a hard and fast rule, or is that just something that Okay, just wanted to clarify.
That's what I'm reading. I don't have an actual provision number or whatever, but okay. I do believe it is a year. Yes. Again, I have documentation as my next item. I think we talked about that already, but I'm just making the point that if you don't write that down or if you don't have that, it literally didn't happen.
Well, and you, so in order to have that 1 year of history that you're talking about in a lot of these things, you've had to also incorporate certain pieces of hardware that will be able to basically log 4 years worth of information that you can get back to anytime you need.
That is a great tangent that we can go off on to right now. So let's pick on a couple of those things. Endpoint virus protection would be a requirement that you're going to need. Again, a lot of that is labeled as addressable, and it doesn't really say. I mean, it does in PCI, but it might not in HIPAA. It doesn't say that. But so my endpoint protection provider does provide those logs.
Okay.
So you'd want a managed antivirus. You know, for a small office, you might say, well, I'll just run Security Essentials. So you do have endpoint protection. But how are you going to incorporate and make sure that you have access to all those logs? So you might say, well, I'll just pull it up on that computer. Well, what if that computer gets ransomware and won't boot anymore? Or something to that effect. How are you going to know what happened previously? A lot of the times an RMM platform can help you with this as well. Or a lot of the times you should have a UTM device, which Abraham mentioned, because there is a requirement that you should have those logs on that device, as well as intrusion prevention and intrusion detection on that device as well, so that you can be preventative in the protection of your PHI. And you need to be able to have a log that says, yes, we saw somebody, or we saw this, or we detected this, and here's how we addressed it, so on and so forth. So yes, logs are very important if you're going to be providing services to any sort of PCI requires this, so there's a lot of businesses where you'll need this. So managed products are what you're going to need to have to provide. So again, I think this also moves you away from being able to be a break-fix provider for a healthcare provider. You can't. You need to be a managed provider, an ongoing relationship, unless they're going to try to do this all in-house. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, and let me say one thing. I think about things like this. When you think about the common sense of these rules that are put in place, take your medical records. whoever you are out there listening to the show, take your own medical records and think about if those medical records of all your whole entire health history were put out on the internet for everyone to see. How would you feel? And so we're talking about things, you know, a lot of people go, man, this is a big pain, but understand it from the viewpoint of you don't want your medical records getting out to where other people that shouldn't be seeing them can see them. So everything you're putting in place is to protect you from that.
Well, even more importantly is, let's say you're just a healthy person and you just have 45 years of annual checkups where you get the green stamp that everything's great. It's not so much that it's your healthcare history. It's all the information that's attached with that.
Okay.
Financial, you know, personal identifiable information and everything that can be done with that afterwards. There's a gentleman by the name of David Sims who we'll get into at the end of the podcast, but he says, you know, HIPAA doesn't have anything to do with regulations. HIPAA is about patient care. It's really about patient care because, and I like to take it a little even more brash with it, is you don't want to be a jerk. People are giving you all this information. It's your responsibility to protect it. You know, their social security, their financial information. And God forbid that they're a patient that has a complex medical history, whether that be anything like HIV or just a serious medical condition. Let's say that medical record gets compromised and gets changed and they go somewhere else and they get improper treatment based on the exposure of the medical record that you gave somebody.
Right.
Or, you know, there's even stories on the billing front where like somebody's medical record will get stolen. So the bad guys, quote unquote, will bill for like the removal of an appendix, submit a fake claim, get paid for that claim. But then the hospital will go back and bill the original person. There's actually a story that is where that person has gone to like the billing department, lifted their shirt and said, look, I have my appendix. I have no scar.
Oh my God.
The hospital is still chasing them to be paid. You know what I mean?
Right.
And you also have to remember there's no real way to reset your medical record. Unlike your financial information, which can get corrected, there's no real way that you just kind of go, okay, reset this for me. Let's clean this up. There's no way to really fix that as easily. I mean, it's a mess.
Yeah.
You can imagine somebody thinking into that.
And what I've never understood is we've talked about HIPAA compliance, been around since 1996. And I think about it today. I just went to the doctor a month ago, I think. And I still have to put my social security number on the form when I'm signing in, which absolutely makes no sense to me whatsoever. We're going to protect you. You know, I have a medical card or whatever, another number that you can go by. Why are they still using your social security number in order to get treatment? I know why they are, because that way they can track you down and make you pay.
It is my understanding they are not supposed to, but there still are dental insurance companies. One of the primary ones here in Michigan still uses your social security number as the ID. So, yes, that still
happens.
I've
seen it all the time.
And even the state of Michigan does that a lot, even with a lot of the departments.
Yep.
You know, so it, and all right, we do this as a living. It's not easy. It's a big change. They probably have a huge database of antiquated history. I mean, there's a lot of excuses. If it was easy, everybody would do it and we'd be done.
Right.
And HIPAA compliance verification, quote unquote, would be easy, but it's not. So that's where we're at, you know, with
good
this
point.
Whole mess. So, all right. So you've signed a BAA, business associate agreement with the covered entity, your customer. So now you may need to run out and get service providers to provide a BAA, either with you, if you're going to be the front-facing provider for your client, or you need to get these BAAs maybe for your client. A good example of this is maybe your backup provider. Maybe you're using G Suite. Google provides a default BAA. You can get that with their paid G Suite products. And it's also your responsibility to make sure the providers that you're dealing with are compliant or meet HIPAA compliance. You know, there's no way that they can just stamp and say they're HIPAA compliant, but they can meet the addressable rules in there. Good example of this is a lot of guys use CrashPlan, and I love CrashPlan. I really like that for data backup. But there's only one way to try to get to a level of HIPAA compliance with CrashPlan, and that is to use their CrashPlan Enterprise and have your own enterprise server. And I've been running around with a couple guys about this. I mean, it's in their documentation. You can look it up on the links. That's why I don't use CrashPlan, because a lot of that compliance would fall back on me to manage that server. That's not what I do. I work for my clients. I don't want to manage my own compliant backup server. So that's why I use Intronis, or you can look at a lot of the other guys that will provide you all sorts of documentation. So that's what you need to do. You need to ask and say, hey, a lot of my clients are medical based. A lot of my clients deal with PCI or credit card. I need the standards. Give me what I need to protect me, and you and I need to sign a BAA. Okay.
You know,
Go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things that I think about with your story there is some people, you've gone round and around about some of these issues. And here's what I go back to. If I don't see a stop sign, yet I roll through the stop sign, am I still at fault? And the answer is absolutely yes. So you need to be careful and watch what you're actually, a lot of these things are really not worth arguing about. Find out the information, get what you need, and then make a good, better decision instead of just going, well, I think it's going to work. Or I heard from so-and-so's brother-in-law's sister's dog that, yeah, this is absolutely covered.
And don't forget about it. We talked a little bit about this is, you know, it's reasonable and appropriate for the practice that you're dealing with. So, I mean, if we talk about physical security, some of my practices have alarm systems. Some of them don't. You know, why is that? So you do a risk assessment. You know, some feel that they do, some feel that they don't. I mean, so a lot of this, you know, is what is reasonable and appropriate for the situation that you're in. And that would be a judgment call that you make for your clients, with your clients, or your client might make for you. You know, on back to your point, kind of, if your client is saying or won't do something that you know or you feel should be reasonable and appropriate for them, and they don't want to do it, then I would just make sure you have some sort of communication documented with them that says, well, I understand you don't want to do this that I've recommended. It's my understanding that this would be reasonable and appropriate for your medical practice, you know, just to understand that, you know, and that's fine. And then move on.
Right.
Yep. Right. And then you might even get to the point where you make a judgment call where maybe I just can't be the provider for this person since they're not willing to engage in this kind of patient care, period. Maybe gotcha. You don't want to be on it. Because keep in mind, just like Abraham said, you might get lassoed into this. So that is going to have to be a decision you want to make before you start working with healthcare companies of any type. Maybe you don't want this kind of hassle. So, okay, BAAs. We're signing a BAA with covered entity. We might need to get BAAs from our service providers. Keep that in mind. My biggest thing is if you're dealing with a service provider and you say, yes, I need a business associate agreement, or we need to discuss that for HIPAA, and they say, what is that? It's time to move on.
Real simple.
All right. As a provider, and as a covered entity, you should have a disaster recovery plan, risk assessment, breach response plans, incident response plans. These are all those documentation we talked about. And there's a ton of it. So you need to have it as much as your customers do. A lot of the times my customers look at me and think I'm going to do that for them. That is not going to happen. And there is also really no template for that because it would be different for every client. If we break it down to something really dumb, the story I've heard on other podcasts would be is, let's say the office is at the end of the street at a T intersection. You may have to even address what happens if a car runs the right light and crashes into the window in your office. I mean, is that reasonable and possible? Probably. How does that affect the protection of your data? Mm. What's going to happen? You know, other things you need to look at is, you know, what about your shredding company? Do they shred on site, or do they haul out your paper in a truck to somewhere else to be shredded? You know, those are two big different things, because what happens to all that paperwork that might be in that truck if that truck tips over on the way to wherever it's going to be shredded? So, you know, that's a big deal. So you might want to advise your clients or look at your paper. Are you shredding your own paperwork before you throw it away? So there's just a little, you know, where does all that information go and where are you storing it? And we're going to get back to that x-ray that's sitting on that front desk computer here in a couple of minutes. So we talked about intrusion and prevention and intrusion detection. That would be part of an UTM device that Abraham brought up. That's a requirement. Endpoint protection managed. That's a requirement. Secure email. It's funny, you know, in the HIPAA requirements, it doesn't say encrypt your email. It just says your email needs to be secure. So at the beginning of this, way back when, everybody just thought HTTPS and we're good, it's secure, yay. You know, and there are all these arguments. No, look, your email needs to be encrypted. And a good example of how that happens is just imagine what your bank does with you. Does your bank ever just send you an email and say, here's your account balance and here's how we're going to transfer the money?
Right.
No, you don't get any information by your bank. You need to go log into a system, right?
Yep.
So your email needs to be encrypted. I use Protected Trust a lot because it has a great integration with probably EagleSoft, which is the primary dental application I use. If you're a big G Suite user, there's a product called Virtru, which is great because it is web-based. It integrates right into the Gmail web client, which is awesome. Also, there's a couple of products out there where they send an encrypted email to you, and then they send another email right after that with the password. That doesn't work either. Just so you know, that doesn't work either.
So let me say my understanding of the way this encrypted email is supposed to work for medical records from the things that I get. So if I get if the doctor's office wants to communicate with me, they're going to send an email to basically a web portal that's secured somewhere and it's encrypted end to end. Then I need to log into that web portal in order to see that email or information. In other words, you can't just send an email from Outlook to Outlook without it, you know, without there being some sort of encryption in between or someplace for that to sit. Because if you're going from point A to point B, there's so many rabbit trails going to there that there might be part of that path where it's actually not encrypted, correct?
Yes, with a couple caveats, just in the way the technology is handled. So the way that I do it is I make the triangle. So the information gets encrypted from where it's being sent. So it's already encrypted before it even is transmitted, gets sent to someplace where it's held, protected, encrypted. And then an authorized user has to go and retrieve that information, just like your bank.
Okay.
You know, you have to go log in to get the information. Or nowadays you can log into your hospital or doctor's office and see all your medical history and stuff, but you need to go retrieve it as an authorized user.
Okay.
The only way that would be different, and the reason nobody does this is it's a complex process, is you could exchange PGP keys or something with another user, you know, ahead of time, meaning here's my key, here's your key. We could get together and use an email product, the same email product, so that when you send me an email, I'm already an authorized user. But you'd have to add another level on the endpoints to make sure that the correct person was logging onto the system to get that email. So the idea is that we're authenticating, we're protecting the data by encrypting it in transit and at rest. And we know that the other person on the other end has to be an authenticated user to retrieve that data. So yes, that's why it works like that. That's why you just can't send it something encrypted and then the next email send a password. Because you don't know what's happening on this end. It's the IMO, in my opinion. But, you know, at this point, I haven't seen where it says that you can't fax medical information. So you don't know who's on the other end of a fax machine. But
wow. And that's funny because that goes into a machine that's sitting in an office somewhere and basically anybody can access that. That just seems so wrong.
But there are rules on VoIP phone systems and VoIP faxing. So if you're doing faxing via electronic, meaning internet faxing, and or if you have a VoIP phone system, you need to address that with a risk assessment and talk to your provider.
Wow. Okay.
So, yes, as we move further and further down the rabbit hole. So, yes, email needs to be secure. Actually, all transmission needs to be secure. And even all the transmission verbally that you're talking about in the office needs to be secure. And this moves away from the technology aspect, but used to be, let's talk about an orthodontist. Bobby's at the office and he says, hey, does my friend Johnny go here? Back in the day, it would be, yes, absolutely. Today it's, you know, you got to look at poor Bobby and say, well, due to HIPAA rules, you can't disclose any of that. So anyways, moving on. as far as securing your network too, you know, don't forget about the other devices on your network, because healthcare firms are finding that medical devices, blood pressure monitoring, you know, all those medical devices that you get hooked up when you go to the doctor, maybe intraoral cameras, depending on how they connect to your network, if they do, printers, credit card machines, copiers, mobile devices, IoT devices, blah, 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 blah. They are finding all of those are great ways that, you know, the bad guys like to get in to get to medical information. So if you're going to secure your network, make sure you're securing that. And under your risk assessments, just like we talk about with IoT devices, do those need to be on separate networks? With PCI devices, meaning credit card machines, if you're storing the credit card information, those need to be on separate networks as well, isolated. So, you know, there's a lot of rules. Just keep in mind that you have to have a wide view of everything that's happening on your network, and you also have to have that all documented. Let's get back to that picture and everything else we talked about. Donna Carden on one of the podcasts I listened to, Donna Grindle on one of the podcasts I listened to, says it's about the people. She says that all the time, and it's true. If you have employees, meaning with your MSP and or your customers, that's probably where the problem's going to start. One of your guys is going to misconfigure some equipment. One of their people is going to click on a bad link or tell somebody on the phone what they should tell them. So the point there is ongoing training. It has to be ongoing. You can't just do a HIPAA review once a year. More and more rules are coming down that new employees need to be trained and have a HIPAA rule, like in the first 15 to 30 days of employment. You know, so in your employee manual, in their employee manual, you know, you need to address all of this to make sure that your employees and their employees are getting the amount of training that they need.
Wow.
And also keep in mind that HIPAA can be an element of a lot of things that you have going on, meaning purchasing a new piece of equipment, you know, you're going to want to consider compliance. And I should probably shouldn't say HIPAA, I should say compliance in general, PCI compliance, HIPAA compliance. If you're going to buy something for your office, whether it's for one of your customers or your own, how's that going to affect your compliance? You also want to talk to your insurance agent about this and probably have them talk to their insurance agent. There is cyber insurance, which has become ungodly expensive now, but you know, you're going to want to talk to them about it. Also, as we've talked about a little bit, compliance, anytime you're choosing a provider to do anything, your cell phone, printers, any software as a service provider, you're going to have to keep compliance in the back of your mind too. Is that service compliant? Like I was really thinking about rolling out Basecamp to use with a lot of my clients for documentation, interaction, project management, and all that, but they are not compliant. They have everything in compliant, but they will not do a BAA and they will not, you know, so okay. I can't use them.
Right.
That's not to say they're not great and their information isn't secure. They're just not interested in crossing the bridge that we're talking about, which is a business decision that's just fine. Now, it's been about a year since I looked at them, so that could have changed. But, you know, that's just an example of what you're going to want to talk about. And the biggest thing is, and this is just another training portion, is make sure both you and your customers understand what a breach is. All right, because you need to report those and or address those immediately. So if you have a medical client that gets ransomware, that is a breach, period. There's no, unless you can prove beyond a doubt that it wasn't. So a good example of that is I had a new client, new dental office. By maybe the second week I was there, one of the ladies got a pop-up, you know, call the 800 number, you're infected.
Oh.
So she called.
Mm.
You know, I'm going to pick on her a little bit. You know, older lady, not really computer savvy, obviously probably a fantastic hygienist, which I know nothing about. So, you know, I'm not picking at her from skill level. She calls, but the biggest mistake she made is she let somebody else remote into that computer.
Mm.
So, you know, we had to report our possible breach, do a forensic study, blah, 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 get some lawyers involved. Blah, blah. So we basically had to prove that that person at no time had any access to any PHI, which we did, luckily. But it was still about a $13,000 to $15,000 expense by the time it was done for the doctor, which if you think about it, is totally non-value added.
Yes.
Meaning she put all that money in. Granted, her and the employees and everybody else learned a lot along the way, but we could have probably spent a lot less and got the exact same amount of training. So, you know, understand what a breach is. And then from that story, when you're talking about that, is create policies, both for your own company and for your customers, you know, how the computers are used, what we do on the computers. I have a couple offices which actually have a computer off to the side, which staff uses for on lunch or whatever that, or, you know, everybody has a cell phone now. So put that on some sort of guest wireless and that's what they use. But, you know, it's all about policies and training.
Now, what type of, you know, going back to one of the things you talked about, what type of insurance do you need to have as a business in order to best protect yourself if there is something nefarious that happens?
Well, I'm not an insurance agent, and luckily I have a great one. So, you know, basically I just sat down with him and had to talk about it. And I talked about cyber insurance with him. And cyber insurance is kind of funny. Because if you would have got a policy maybe 5 years ago or 10 years ago, it would have been maybe a 2-page document that you had to answer maybe 10 questions on, signed, and paid $500 a year for. Now it's, if you've ever done a PCI assessment, it's probably like 300 to 500 questions, and it's extremely expensive, and they want to know everything about it. And you probably really need to get a partner involved, an insurance partner involved, to help you guide you through that. The problem is with all of this is if you get a cyber insurance policy, which I'm not recommending against or for, but if you don't correctly answer those questions and then you do have a breach, the insurance company is going to come back to you and say, well, that's not right. So we're not paying.
Right.
You know, they're going to try to find their ways out of that. So you want to deal with somebody that can help guide you through all those questions big time.
Okay.
And again, you, as any business should, you need to have some liability insurance and you know, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Now, so finally, go ahead.
Before you move on, there's one more thing that I wanted to bring up, and I've heard this story over and over again. We talk about the technology side of compliance and all the things that we do to secure these businesses. The one thing, and I've heard this story over and over again, where somebody, let's say a receptionist at a doctor's office, is on Facebook, and why Facebook is even allowed in those offices, I have no idea. But they say, oh, I just saw Susie so-and-so at 1 o'clock here, and she was whatever, and she was having a great day or something like that. Now, when you've done something like that, or when something is done, or somebody has done something like that on Facebook or other social media platforms, would that be considered a breach in this case? Or
probably
because the information has gone out, right?
Right. You know, and that's not really a technical question. So that gets in the gray area of my understanding. So whenever a customer asks me that kind of a question, I always say, yes. Why would you do that? You know what
again,
I mean?
Again, common sense, right? Common sense.
Right. You know, okay. Is that reasonable? I mean, is that appropriate for you to do that? The story I always come back to, and I heard this on the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, which I'll talk a little bit about at the end of this, which is a great podcast about all this, and probably where I got most of my information in an entertaining way about this. But the story that, if I can recall what they told, was, I don't know, somebody committed a lot of murders, and the police caught up with him, shot him, blah, blah, blah. I don't recall where it is, but he ended up in the hospital. And then one of the nurses in the ER that actually helped save him posted on her Facebook page or whatever, you know, I just looked into the eyes of the devil, or, you know, or something like that.
Okay.
Because this guy did a bunch of heinous stuff. But obviously, she didn't release any information, but people knew, based on what was happening, her location, what she reported, what she was divulging.
Right.
That this person that did this in this medical aspect was at this hospital, got treated for this, blah, blah, blah. And I believe that that was ruled to be a healthcare information disclosure.
Okay.
So a breach. So now, do I think Facebook should be allowed in medical offices? Absolutely, because it's a marketing tool. But do you need to be careful about what you're exposing and what you're showing? I mean, I still have some offices that go both ways. If you know, like in a dental office or especially in an orthodontic office, you know, it used to be a big thing to say, welcome, Johnny Smith. You know, you're getting your braces off today. They'd have this big signage. You know, and some still do that and some still don't, or a lot of the times, if you remember in a doctor's office, they used to call out full names or, you know, all that kind of stuff. So a lot of that stuff has changed from an administrative perspective of all of this. If you notice, when you go to the doctor's office now, a lot of the times they like have a rope that says, stand behind this rope until the person in front of you is done.
Right.
So that would be an administrative thing.
Okay.
So, I mean, I would always tell somebody in any office, whether it's the technical, talking about the technical perspective is, you know, if we're not talking about spending $25,000 to make it happen, why don't we just do it if it's free and cheap and it doesn't impede providing great patient care? Then we should be doing it. And then why would you expose that if there was any risk that it might be patient information or a breach? So, right.
Okay. All right. So where do we leave off here?
So in a nutshell, let's run through about eight things that are what I think are important. Number one, did I mention that we need to document everything?
Yes, many times.
Okay. And I'm kind of the kettle calling black because I still have found a great way to do that.
Okay.
I'm still struggling with that. So I looked at third-party apps. I'm going to look at a couple more at Channel Pro when we're out there this week, so on and so forth. But, you know, that's an ongoing struggle even for me. Tackle HIPAA bit by bit. We talked about the elephant, which they talk about on Help Me With HIPAA. So it's about building a culture of compliance, meaning if the doctor doesn't care about this stuff, none of the employees don't. If you don't care about it, none of your employees are going to care about it. If you don't care about it and bring it to the people you work for, they're not going to care about it. So just always kind of have that front facing. You know, be compliant. I have a couple that use maybe like a swear jar methodology. So they work together. They catch each other not doing something compliant. They count that as a win. So they'll get something like in a fishbowl. And then the doctor, I have one doctor that draws once a month, and he gives away $100 Ruth or a $200 Ruth Chris gift certificates.
Ooh, nice.
Every month.
Okay.
But he's building that culture of compliance. So they all try to get on each other about keeping things good. So, you know, just whatever it takes. We mentioned that you're never compliant. It's ongoing, documented. The training needs to be ongoing and documented. Yes, when you do a training class, you need to have people sign off they were there, who was there, what you talked about. If you didn't document it, training never happened.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, we talked about cyber security insurance. Don't be fooled by it. Cyber insurance, security insurance is not going to cover you if you just decide not to do anything. So, you know, I've had one doctor or a couple of doctors say to me, well, we just won't do anything. I'll just buy $25 million in cyber security insurance or something ridiculous like that. No insurance company is going to pay you for being negligent.
Right.
And you also keep in mind that there is the possibility of criminal charges if you are negligent. So don't be negligent. All right. Do not ever mislead or misinform your clients. If you don't know, just say, I don't know. All right. Don't try to look like the pro when you don't know, and don't sign anything back in the day without getting some counsel on it. So if somebody slides a business associate agreement in front of you, even if it's a trusted long-term client, you don't know if somebody else wrote that for them, because a lot of the BAAs now are starting to be a little tricky where they're trying to push all their compliance requirements onto other people.
Okay.
Or at least try to share the misfortune if bad things should happen. So just be careful about that. You know, if you're signing a document, you might be signing something that you're not intending. You know, a lot of doctors and a lot of customers always say, well, why is this important? Why are we doing this? I mean, there's a lot of reasons. My personal thought is the government started this just due to insurance fraud, the trillions of dollars of insurance fraud that happen due to medical records being stolen or lost. But if you really think about it, most of this stuff, at least from a technical aspect, is stuff we should have been doing all along.
Right.
Securing our networks, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, in the HIPAA guidelines, or really what I would roll back and call the NIST guidelines, and I'll have the NIST guidelines a link provided. It's called the Cyber Framework, the National Institute of Science and Technology. Basically, just some guidelines of what you should do for every office. I think you should use them for all your clients, whether they have a HIPAA compliance need or not. The biggest burden maybe of HIPAA is the documentation. So you might not need to do that with all of your clients, but securing all your clients is a great idea because one, it's going to make your job easier in the long run, therefore make their job easier. Now, I would call this what we just talked about, a HIPAA primer or an introduction to the 100 class that you might take later. So again, you want to consider what's reasonable and appropriate for the customers you're dealing with. If you want more information, I would listen to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, helpmewithhipaa.com. Donna Grindle and David Sims, who I'll give a shout out to, is going to be at the Unconvention. I heard him talking about it on the last podcast. And I'm hoping somehow he hears about this so that I get a couple points for the $100 Amazon gift card they're giving away. So, but I'm looking forward to meeting him. I would love to meet Donna Grindle because I'd love to find out some way to get her up here to put something on for all of my clients. I think that would be great. Because a lot of the times when you talk to your clients about it, they're just like, oh, that's just my IT guy trying to sell me IT stuff or, you know, Right. Something like that. You know, it's like when you talk to your kids as parents, you know, you say something to them and then they look at their coach and the coach says the exact same thing. And then their kids look back at you and said, well, coach said, you know, when it comes from somebody else, a lot of times they take it a little bit more as value or it's just affirming what you said or something like that. So help me with HIPAA. I mean, they have over 100 episodes now. Start at the beginning. They're all valued. They do a really good job. Some humor and it's entertaining and very knowledgeable. So did I leave anything out?
You know what, John? I don't think so. I think you've covered like you said, this is a beginning primer to some of the things that we need to think about if we're going to go into this side of the business, i.e. taking care of anybody in the medical field. But going back to what you said earlier, I 100% agree that really for all of our business customers, we should actually be doing this, most of the security stuff anyways. I am still surprised at the networks that I walk into that are unsecured, unsecured Wi-Fi, all these kind of things. Just it's funny to me that somebody will throw in a managed switch, i.e. there's government facilities that I know of. If somebody comes in, IT department throws in a managed switch, but they don't lock anything down. It's basically a dumb switch that they paid a lot of money for. It blows my mind that the IT companies out there that are not taking this stuff seriously. And I think one of the things is down the road, this is going to be getting more and more important for everyone. I mean, think about it. Your social security number gets scammed and you have identity theft. You've got all these different problems that go along with that. This stuff is only going to get worse as we put more and more stuff online or have access to more and more stuff online.
You know, and this is a lot of work, not only for you as an IT provider, but a lot of work for your covered entities to do. And it's an ongoing entity, and everybody's already busy, mm-hmm. You know, trying to keep up with what they have already. But in the end, if you can get a nice percentage of this rolled out, I really feel it makes your job a lot easier. Especially if you're a managed service provider, meaning if you can roll a lot of this out, you may have fewer tickets, less, you know, more value add and more profitability in a nutshell, because you're going to make things easier for them and easier for you, both from a managed aspect and a security aspect. So I think it's win-win for everybody. And it's really what we should have been doing from the beginning.
Right. It's unfortunate anytime the government has to step in and give us these mandates, produce these laws that make us kind of sort of do some of this stuff. And hopefully that, again, I'm not against having somebody come in and say, hey, here's the stuff that needs to be done. Because like John said, we should have been doing it from the beginning. It's basically our fault for being lazy and other things. Lazy and cheap.
You know, and to kind of end, right. And to kind of put this on the back, you know, do I think the HIPAA police, quote unquote, are going to come to my doctors and orthodontic offices? Probably not. Would some of them possibly get audited in the future, either via mail or some sort of survey? Possibly. But that's not really what I'm going after. You know, you got to remember, let's say one of my clients did have a breach. Well, one did, you know, but we were able to prove that, you know, We didn't have an APHI or anything like that. And we've since taken steps and learned from that. So it's, you know, a constant improvement. But if you do have a breach, you know, the first thing OCR or HHS or whatever is going to come in and say, hey, we need your documentation. Show us. They're going to send you a list and they're going to say, show us that you've been doing all of this. And then based on that is what they're going to do is then they'll talk about the corrective action you're going to get, the possible fine you're going to get. But also keep in mind, you have to make your customers aware and yourself that after that, that has nothing to do with the possible civil litigation that you might get. It's your patients and their customers will sue you, them and you.
Right.
You know, for any reason. Anybody can sue anybody for any reason. But yes, you are opening yourself to that kind of litigation as well. So just keep that in mind.
Okay. Very good. Well, John, I appreciate you coming on and putting this stuff together and sharing all the information, all the things you've learned by doing this in your own business. And it's been an eye-opener for me. I've learned some things, even though for myself, I probably will never go down this path because it sounds like a big pain in the beep. But other than that, I think it's unfortunately or fortunately, whichever way you want to look at it, there's always going to be medical. So this is definitely one part of the industry that needs to be taken care of. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of businesses out there that are going to want to go down this path to make sure that these people are taken care of in the right way. So I appreciate it. And if you want, let people know where they can find you at. And we'll have links for all the stuff we talked about in the show notes.
I'm always encouraged or look forward to talking to people about this because, you know, again, I say this all the time, but this is definitely one area where I'm sure I don't know everything. You know, that's the only thing I'm sure of with HIPAA is that I don't know everything. So obviously mavengroup.net or John at mavengroup.net, you know, this might be a great opportunity for us to, you know, we're always jumping on the Hangouts. You know, if a couple of us wanted to jump on the Hangouts and argue about all this, you know, that'd be great too. You know, I'm open to that. So
absolutely.
It's always fun to have these kind of round tables, you know, and somebody might have the magic bullet for documentation and how they're doing that, whether they're using their RMM platform or something like Autotask or something like that. So, you know, this, they say, and help me with HIPAA, it's an elephant. So we got to figure out some way to just get it done bite by bite to eat it up. So
absolutely. And if you guys want to ask any more questions, you can either email John or you can email podnuts@podnuts.com and I'll definitely get that information to him. Or John, that's a great idea. Maybe doing a hangout in the evening sometime where we can actually sit and discuss this stuff. I truthfully avoid a lot of hangouts just because it's just a humongous waste of time. But if something can be accomplished in that time where we can all actually get together and learn something, I'm all for doing something like that. So we can definitely set something like that up. I think that would be great because this is definitely a deep, deep issue that needs to be dealt with. So it's good. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.